GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present the By George Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the post-game podcast. Unfortunately, not a night we want to be celebrating. George Mason falls to VCU on senior night, 71-36. Tyler Byram here with you, and I'm also joined with Brian from By George. A game that even Coach Paulson said was embarrassing, to say the least.
Yeah. You know, I think he kept his composure in the post-game press conference because it is Otis's last home game. Obviously, we'll get into that here shortly. Fan favorite of ours, obviously gave his heart and soul and everything he had to this program.
He didn't deserve this.
No. And so, you know, I thought Paulson was a little bit too lighthearted for my liking, laughing a couple times, cracking some jokes. But obviously, he pretty much described the second half as trash.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Quick play-by-play from today's game, just in case you missed it. We thought we were going to have a really low-scoring defensive game. Don't know what the over-under was, but the under looked really good in the first 10 minutes of the contest. VCU actually missed their first six shots, and at that point, Mason only scored 2 points, and that was kind of indicative of what the night was going to go. Both teams struggled from the field to start. They started 6 for 25. Jared Reuter got 2 early fouls. There was a stretch there where no one scored in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It was really ugly. Both teams were turning it over. Mason actually had gotten a lead. They used an 11-1 run to go up. I believe it was 16-9. And then right before timeout, VCU just rattles off 5 straight points off of turnovers that George Mason had. And then Marcus Evans hit a 3-pointer off of one of those transition opportunities, his first points of the entire game. And right after then, it was an entirely different ball game. Mason wasn't playing defensively the rest of the way. It just, after that mini 5-0 spurt, after Mason looked like they had control of the game, it just got ugly. VCU ended the half on a 10-3 run. And then the second half comes around. We're 10 minutes in. Mason scored 4 points. VCU's on a 23-0 run. Otis Livingston goes to the locker room because he's injured his ankle again, and it was just a bad second half. I'm not going to go any further than that because the bottom line is Mason scored 15 points in the final 20 minutes. 36 total points. If I'm correct, I believe this is the second fewest points Mason has ever scored. I do know for a fact, though, it is their lowest scoring game since 2001, and that was in the CAA Championship, a game that Mason actually won and made it to the NCAA tournament for the third time because of it. But 36 points, losing by 35, almost got doubled up against your rival on senior night. I think you know where I'm going, but it just not a good night for anyone involved.
So let's get the negatives out of the way because there's a lot of them. You know, and I don't want to pin you on things that you've said in the past, but you've been kind of high on Jared, whereas some of us have not been. And I'm wondering, after like a performance like this and versus St. Louis and Duquesne, you know, where do you stand with him? Because, you know, you got to, you know, someone like me argues constantly that Kalix needs more minutes, not just to have even minutes with Reuter, but to have more minutes, a guy that DP again sat in the presser and said had one of his best games. If he's constantly having one of his best games, when are you just going to give the guy more minutes? Where do you stand on Jared now?
No, well, your first point about Greg is absolutely correct. Greg Kalix is playing phenomenal. He probably has earned that starting job back. Remember, he started all of last year, so I think him being in this bench role is really proving well for the development of him as an entire player. But defensively, he played fantastic for George Mason tonight. He was able to stop Santos Silva down in the paint. There was a period there where, like I said, VCU couldn't get any shots off. And Jared got into foul trouble early, and then he never played like more than a two-minute stretch at a time. And I don't care who you are, but you're not going to get into a good run like that. And then when you're down by 23, Jared Reuter's not a guy that you want in the game when you're down by 23, because you need to be quick-moving offense, get some quick transition looks. You need different guys in, some guys to really swing momentum. Jared Reuter's a really good guy that can help you be in a close game and nail some key buckets or also build on a lead. When you're down, I mean, He only played 16 minutes tonight, and he's had two early fouls. He didn't have any other fouls after that. He didn't get many touches, but
so you're not, still seeing promise. You're not entirely quitting on him yet.
I'm not quitting on him yet. I just think it's not a game that is in his fortune. He was playing from behind the entire time, but it also I'm not gonna put lipstick on a pig. It wasn't a good night for him either. I mean, he only had one shot. And in the offense in the second half.
I think
half,
he made that shot, right?
He made the shot. He missed two free throws.
100% game today.
Yeah, he missed two free throws, but he made the shot. But, yeah, there's a lot moving forward to have Reuter in the offense. And I think when Mason eventually has the reality of Otis Livingston II not being on their team, that he's going to be a guy that's going to have to facilitate the passing and get the ball to different guys that can score.
Okay, I got one more question for you, and then we'll move on in our agenda. Coach said that they played well early on. Did they really play well, or did VCU just miss shots? I mean, we never really had many points at any, you know, any single point of this entire game. Kind of feel like that was a cop-out. I just didn't really think we looked that good all game long.
The defense, and that has been something that Coach Paulson has been really trying to stress for the past several games, if you will. It's just their defense and forcing guys into contested shots, which they did in the first 10, 12, 13 minutes of the game. VCU had like 9 points 11 minutes into the game, and Mason, when they went on that 11-1 run and they were just using transition chances, keeping VCU on their heels, not playing the defense that they want to be playing, Mason was – they did play well. Granted, that was – with both the offense and the defense playing well, maybe that was a 3-minute stretch. So 3 minutes out of 40, you gotta get a whole lot more than that. I think that stretch shows that they can compete, and I think we saw that in the last game against VCU, which just makes this all the more frustrating because you know they can do it. You know that they can beat this press that VCU just drowned you in.
It's nothing new.
It's nothing new. It's a little bit different than Havoc. It's a lot of different than the Havoc style defense. But this is the same style of defense that they've been playing since Mason joined the A-10. Really tough, a lot of traps in the corners, forcing you to turn the ball over and just making you extremely tired earning every single point. There was 3 minutes of good basketball for George Mason in this game, collectively as a whole. Some better defense and some good opportunities, but once they fell behind, this team hasn't – they came back in St. Louis. That's a game I personally didn't watch, but I haven't seen from Mason be able to come behind from a big deficit in a way that you want your team to be able to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, I would agree. I think, there's times that we looked okay tonight. I think coming into this game, you had to keep them from hitting threes. I think we did well closing out early on, forced Jenkins, forced a couple other guys to miss some early shots.
They only shot 23% from deep. I got into it with one of my guys from NBC Sports Washington, AJ Atai. He was saying that VCU's offense is fantastic. Their offense wasn't that good tonight. They didn't play well offensively. It's just their defense just swarmed Mason. They had 28 points off of turnovers. And then some of them were, you could say, in the same category, long rebounds. They just tried to get out in transition. Offensively, VCU did not play a good game. They did not play a game that they typically play this season, and they just absolutely destroyed George Mason.
Yeah, and I think, they didn't shoot well from three, but they did hit a couple backbreaker threes early on.
Yeah, that Marcus Evans three that I mentioned earlier, that was huge.
Okay. So
the one before the half, too, he hit another one.
I think we've done a good job finding the positives. We're going to try to continue to do that. What's next on the agenda?
All right, well, it's senior night, so we have to talk about Otis. Early on in the second half, he wasn't having a good game to begin with. He didn't have the same explosivity that we're used to him seeing.
He's clearly been dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury for some time.
Yeah, I think it was ever since the St. Bonaventure game he got injured? Ever since the St. Bonaventure game, it seems like he's lost a step, if you will. And then when he went down,
I believe it was no contact.
No, he was pressured, but there was no body contact. He just tried to make a change in direction, and it just his ankle, I believe, buckled, went straight to the locker room. From there, from that point on, even though VC was on a run, that was when everyone in this arena knew it was done. And it's just such a shame for him with how he's done. But I think the bigger picture look at it is Otis clearly isn't 100%, and that may hurt this team if they want to try and make a run in the Atlantic 10 tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty clear at this point. And, you know, and unfortunately, I think we're going to have to play one more game to get that title. You know, a lot of us were rooting for the top four finish, predicted the top four finish. At times, we were first in the A-10. We were in top four. We still aren't technically eliminated from getting that top four finish. But, you know, asking this team to play one more game, already hobbled by tons of injuries. You know, you even got Boyd playing through injury, Hartwell playing through injury. Kalix just came back from concussion protocol.
You know, all of this is really ironic if you want to consider last season with playing with eight guys deep and you were able to make it throughout the entire season with no injuries. And then this, what's happened this season, Grayer out for the season, Gonar Moore out indefinitely, Otis's ankle, the other injuries that you mentioned already. It's really kind of crazy how they went through all of last year and now guys are playing less minutes than they did last year, and you have some extra guys off the bench and they're just piling up and there doesn't seem to be a end in sight.
And we're not here to make injuries the excuse, but at the same time, you got to talk about it. You got to focus on it. I mean, key pieces are gone. People can say whatever they want to about Gonar Mar's performance early on this season. Who's to say he doesn't turn it on in A-10 play? I mean, we're clearly a different team than we were in our out-of-conference games. And so injuries are, you know, are a concern. They are a problem. And, yeah, a lot of teams are dealing with them late in the season. But we're now without some key guys and losing guys, and we absolutely need someone to put some voodoo magic on Otis's ankle if we have any shot to compete in the A-10 tournament.
Yeah, when he came in, I thought they gave him like a shot of testosterone or something because he was flying around. It didn't look like he had any injury whatsoever. And then after about 90 seconds of play, it caught back up to him, and he quickly had to hope back out.
And that one much was clear. We, again, as a Giant Killer staff, Otis has done nothing but be gracious with us, give us every interview that we've asked for. You know, he's just been an all-around good guy, so there's not much more we can possibly say about him.
Yeah, I think I can speak for the entire Mason Nation with this. Everyone hopes he can get healthy. Hope he can have a good showing in the Atlantic 10 tournament because he deserves to go out with at least – another memorable moment because he's had a ton of them here. But let's go ahead and move forward a little bit. We've seen a lot of this on Twitter, and I think a lot of it's, I don't want to say justified, but a lot of in-the-moment anger. But we have to talk about the two-year season that was brought up last year. For me personally, I think at the time for Coach Paulson, it's a very easy thing to talk about. Don't have a senior on your roster. Guys are going to get better. You're going to have a Virginia transfer come in. The Atlantic 10 as a whole is going to be down the year after that because there weren't many. A lot of seniors were graduating. And it hasn't come to fruition. What are your thoughts on two-year season? Because I know there are a lot of people out there that are upset with that whole idea.
I think if you follow us, you're pretty we're pretty familiar with our opinion of the two-year season, and not just the two-year season, but Dave Paulson as our coach here. It's interesting, Tyler, because even you and I have gotten in debates over Paulson. I remember one super memorable one was when I questioned a one-year extension, and I caught a lot of flack for it. And I get it. You know, it's obviously should be done for recruiting purposes, and I knew that at the time. But I was just, you know, wondering how many one-year
– For those listening – just my whole argument with the whole thing is college contracts are meaningless for the most part. You're never going to see someone go on an expiring contract. There was one time with, like, I think Wake – I can't – it was some ACC school that a coach left because of an expiring contract. But in college basketball, there's no such thing as expiring contracts. Everyone has ridiculous 8-10-year extension. It's just a matter of when they either move up or move to a different program, when they resign, or when they get fired.
Yeah, and it's tough. You don't never want to be the program that's forced into having to fire on a lengthy contract. But the point of bringing that up was just like, you know, there's been a discussion through us about Paulson for a long time. And the two-year season, we didn't appreciate it at the time because, A, it felt like you were, you know, taking away the chances of that current season.
That's a fair point. Very
then,
fair point.
And then this, my second issue was now you're building expectation and we haven't come close to living up to it.
And in retrospect, that's also a very, like, hindsight's always 20/20, but that is a very fair point, the second one, because now they're having to answer for that. And they're having to kind of answer for that in the postgame pressers.
And this isn't expectation brought on by the fans or the players or the workers in Eagle Bank Arena. We're talking about Dave Paulson coming on the By George podcast and setting these expectations himself. So, you know, do I think it's a fireable offense? Of course not. At this point, I'm bought in. You know, whatever. We're part of the rebuild. This is the rebuild. We need to get a couple more recruiting classes under our belt. I've accepted it. At the time, I was angry. I was like, what is this guy doing? Why is he punting the season away? But I think now we're at the end of the two-year season. If it was the NFL, he'd be fired. But, you know, this is college basketball. It's a little bit different. And I think he's new to the A-10. He's obviously brought us in a position of being relevant in the A-10. We're going to finish top six again. You got, in my opinion,
well,
except
well, we'll get into that a little bit.
Accepting DP at this point, I think, you know, I think we have the chance to be mediocre or better going forward. And so I have to be have to accept that. But as far as a two-year season, I don't anticipate DP being that open with his expectations ever again, not just with us, but the fan base. He also, one of their goals was to build the fan base back up. People blame Hewitt for destroying it.
Well, okay.
And so
speaking of which, this hasn't necessarily been – this is a season that started 0-3 with losses to Penn, American, and I don't even remember who the other loss was to. But they nearly sold out homecoming here. Georgia Southern, yeah. They nearly sold out homecoming here. The crowds – crowds here are better now than what they were when Paul Hewitt and the CAA team was – a chance to go to the NCAA tournament, a legitimate chance to go to the NCAA tournament, top two, top three in the league. Crowds are more invested. I think he's done a really good job of having not just the fan base be involved, but just being an active fan, if that makes sense, making them care, not just being like, oh, I went to George Mason, I'm a fan of George Mason basketball, being like, I love these players. I want to be around this team. I love every little aspect of it.
And you can see the family.
Yeah, the family is growing. Now, you can make arguments about certain ways and how the fan base is growing in not areas you want it to, but that's up for debate. But the family as a whole is growing. You're just seeing it slowly just build consistently.
Student attendance is up 18% this year from last year. So, you know, you're looking at, if nothing else, they're doing a better job getting to the students. DP's out there handing out donuts, doing the passing of the basketballs, all those type of things that you have to do on campus. He's good at that stuff. And so sometimes when you're a salesman and you have to come in and you have to sell a product, you're going to missell it. And I think at this point in my time of covering Mason, I've accepted that.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very good point. Stop being mad at Dave Paulson is basically what we're trying to say to you guys.
Yep.
Anyways, quick.
Which is crazy. I didn't get from a By George podcast, but moving
quick
on.
Look at the stats from tonight. One, if we want to have one positive takeaway from today, besides Greg Collect's playing fantastic defense against VCU, also Jordan Miller, third double-double of his career, 11 points, which led the team, 10 rebounds. He had some spark, and if you didn't think he was going to be special to this program going forward, you will be mistaken because he was a little bit special tonight.
And it was very easy to quit this game. Now, there's a lot of players we could point to say, man, they really look like they quit with that turnover or with that deflection off their own leg out of bounds, things like that. We're not going to call out names, but you never saw a single bit of quit in Jordan Miller. I mean, he's making the most of his season. He didn't get to play early on,
well,
but man, did he earn
he missed
his
half
time.
A season. He right. missed half a season, so he's going to have to compile a full season into about 20 games,
and
or less than that.
You know, I don't know how many double-doubles he's had now, but I bet it's three. And, you know, and that's something that we needed from that four spot. You know, Mar didn't ever look like freshman version of himself. We needed an impact player at that four spot. Given that Paulson always plays four out, one inside, that position is very important to crash the glass and pick up offensive boards. And Jordan Miller has done that better than any player that we have.
Yeah, just a quick sidebar. We were having the conversation, I think, during halftime, but next year, Dave Paulson's going to have a very difficult decision. You're going to have, assuming you're going to have a healthy Gonar Mar, Jordan Miller, Jared Reuter, who Dave Paulson loves, and Greg Calixt. Only, I don't see more than three guys starting out of that group.
I mean, you're also looking at potentially needing a point guard in Hartwell, who just earned all freshman honors for last week. And then you have Xavier Johnson, I believe, coming from Episcopal, who just beat Paul VI in the private school playoffs. I mean, is this guy going to come in and be the new Otis of the team? And so I think there's a lot of questions going into the offseason, and I'm excited to see, you know, how that lineup shakes out.
But the season is not done. One more game in the regular season. It is at George Washington. We're running out of time, but just what do you need to see from this team in their game against George Washington that will give you confidence in the tournament in Brooklyn?
You know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is why we have Tyler doing the post-game pods. Have we beaten GW in GW? Since we joined the A-10, Tyler's going to look it up while I continue to answer his question. I believe it's the Smith Center. We haven't, and we don't need to get the answer if you can't find it, Tyler. I don't know if we've beaten them in the Smith Center yet. What I want to see is I just want to see some heart. You know, GW is still a winnable game. It still can have us finish in the top six. You know, it's still something that we just, you know, we need to prove to ourselves and build confidence going into the tournament. You don't want to go into the tournament with like back-to-back blowouts, and I guess we didn't get blown out by St. Louis, but I mean, that's one point we were. You know, just don't want to enter in the postseason off three straight L's.
Yeah, and I found your answer. Not only has George Mason not won at George Washington since they joined the A-10, George Mason has never won at George Washington. 0-14. In fact, there's only four wins total if you count this season's victory over them. I think everyone knows the history between these two schools, and it's been one-sided. But I mean, the point I was trying to make is, if it's a close win, what is your takeaway from that? Does it have to be a definitive win?
No. Close win, you know, a win is a win in my book. I think, you know, the season after we kind of shot our at-large bid out of the water.
0-3.
And then, you know, we kind of killed our chance to be top four.
Richmond?
Although you're claiming there's still a chance. We still have slowly, you know, broken down barriers, you know, year after year. So getting another win at GW, I think, would also give us our most wins in A-10 play.
Already have that.
Okay, so, you know, we are breaking down barriers year in and year out. It may not be as fast as Chris Jones wanted it. It may not be as fast as I wanted it. But the truth is that you got to accept these small gains through a rebuild. Not all rebuilds are going to be the same. We're not VCU. We don't have their facility. We don't have their recruiting pipelines. You know, people are always like, well, Rhodes can turn around and take his team to the tournament in his second year. But it's not the same situation. We can't continue to compare unlike situations.
And Rhodes has been at VCU for over a decade, if you want to count him being assistant. So
right.
It's not a way different scenario.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, we can't continue to compare apples and oranges. I think we're at a point where accept the small things, enjoy them, enjoy the buzzer beaters, enjoy the heart that some of our players are laying out. Paulson's clearly not quitting on all of us. And so at this point, get the win at GW. I don't care if it's I don't care if we score 36 points. Just get the win. All right, go into the tournament with a win.
Well, if they do get the win, and you alluded to it a little bit, there is a chance. Yes, there still is a chance George Mason get a double bye. Here's what has to happen pretty much. Dayton has to lose both their games at home against LaSalle and at Duquesne. St. Bonaventure has to lose at Davidson and at St. Louis. I think the one game that's really in question is the Dayton loss to LaSalle. Of course, you also have to hope that Duquesne doesn't climb in and mess some things up. But it's still possible. But right now, George Mason is currently sixth in the Atlantic 10. They would play the 10 seed, the Richmond Spiders. That game will be on Thursday, not Friday, like I know a lot of people were looking forward to.
Including myself.
Yes. but the hope is not lost again. Yeah. Went on Saturday, and we can have a different conversation going into the Atlantic 10 tournament. But I think I'll pretty much wrap it up from here. Here's my question. Asked it last time. How many wins does Mason get in conference play heading to the Atlantic 10 tournament? They're at 10 right now.
I think we get 11. I think we beat GW. They continue to struggle. if we lose a GW, I'm throwing up the white flag myself. I may skip Brooklyn. Just kidding, I'm going. But, I just think you can't lose a GW. Coach Mo is on a hot seat, I think, in my opinion. And it's just not a game you want to lose. I think we still have the talent, the firepower. Javon Green didn't look his best today, but if he gives us a game that we know he can give us, I think we beat GW.
Well, George Mason falls to VCU on senior night. Final score 71, George Mason 36. Again, the lowest scoring game for George Mason since a 2001 CAA championship. That'll do it here from Eagle Bank Arena. For Brian from By George, I'm Tyler Byram, and we will see you guys next time.
Quick advertisement before we close this out. The Giant Killer crew will be at the observation deck for the GW versus Mason pregame revolutionary rivalry game tailgate in the sky from 10 to 2. We'll be giving away some free tickets this week, so check at By George GMU to win those free tickets. And again, that this podcast was hosted by Tyler Byram. You can follow him on Twitter at the Tyler Byram.